This is Equestrian Legacy Radio.
I want to saddle my horse in the darkness, ride out in the morning dew. I want to breathe some air that's never been breathed. I want to drink the wine of freedom, toast the good ones that we knew. I want to count a million stars and think of you. Want to see one more hometown rodeo, or his hat's off for the flag. We'll cheer that bucking horse in the wild ride. I want to shoot a hole in my TV set and let the silence ring on through. I want to count a million stars and think of you. Don't tell me that the West is dead and gone. My poor heart can't stand to hear that saddle song. If you're saying that you missed it all, I'm betting that you're wrong. Don't tell me it's dead and gone. Want to see one more Charlie Russell print in some old sale barn cafe, where the old men over coffee tell their tales. I want to ride out with a wagon, smell the scent of springtime sage. I want the wind at my back on down the trail. Want to see suntan cowgirl cheeks and long braids neath a hat. Want to hear the summer rain on the roof at a country dance. Then we'll ride out our raging storm till the light comes shining through. And then I count a million stars and think of you. Don't tell me that the West is dead and gone. My poor heart can't stand to hear that sad old song. If you're saying that you missed her all, I'm betting that you're wrong. Don't tell me it's dead and gone. Don't tell me. Dead and gone.
You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. Our guests today are Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America, and joining us around the Campfire Cafe is award-winning singer, songwriter, and cowboy, R.W. Hampton. Campfire Cafe is brought to you today by our good sponsors at Equestrian Legacy's General Store. Stop by the General Store at equestrianlegacy.net and support our fine sponsors. When we come back, we'll be talking with R.W. Hampton.
Tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seed. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again. She cut me loose and told me don't come back. Now I'm like a hobo by the railroad track. Drifting again like an old tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seeds. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again.
Don't matter much to me.
them through these cowboy boots, drifting again like an old tumbleweed, riding the wind with the dandelion seeds. Someday I'll land, but I don't know when. Till then I'm drifting again. Yes, I'm drifting. Till then, I'm drifting again.
Let's do some drifting. Here we go. Got the wind in my back. Yes, sir.
Drifting again by R.W. Hampton, and we're happy to have R.W. joining us on the show today. R.W. was inducted into the Western Music Association Hall of Fame. American Cowboy Magazine has listed R.W. as one of the top 50 country and Western singers of all time, and the National Cowboy Museum and Western Heritage Center has presented him with 3 Wrangler Awards. R.W. Hampton, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, it's good to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, I you're just a good guy, and it's always a real treat to have a fellow that's been a real cowboy join us on the show. And we want to let our audience know a little bit about your background, and I think it's just a great story that you have about your cowboy days. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. I grew up in north central Texas, north of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And, you know, every little old Texas town had a rodeo, 4th of July rodeo or Labor Day or something like that. And so always around rodeos and competed in high school and had a horse I kept on the edge of town. And like every other Texas kid, I just dreamed of being a cowboy. And, you know, instead of having an office, I'd have a horse. And I started working out of here in eastern New Mexico when I got out. Well, I guess it had been about my sophomore year of high school. And something happened there because when the 3:30 bell rang the last day of my senior year of high school, I headed her back out west again and just went to punching cows. And, you know, for a while I thought that's all I'd ever do. I loved every minute of it. It's interesting now because I don't remember that many of the good days. I remember all the blizzards and the burning sun and all that, you know. Time has a way of doing that. But but I was very fortunate to get to do that.
Well, I tell you, when you made that comment about the office thing, it made me think about, and I'm modifying this just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but the worst day out on a horse is better than the best day in an office.
Well, I'm in my office right now down here. We have an office at the barn, and my wife and manager, Lisa, and our office manager, Debbie Sobel, they're in the next room listening to this, and when you and I are through talking, I'm going to probably climb out the window and escape. So I have to go right past. I got to go right past them to get on back outside. But it's the 1st of May here, and it's snowing just pretty steady outside.
Oh wow!
It's beautiful. It's not very cold, and. We've been locked in. We've got this little ranch here. We've been locked in this drought for I don't know how many years now. And but this is just really a gift from God. This snow. I think has some nitrogen or something in it. It has a little something extra, and when the grass turns green, it turns this really deep bluish-green color. And so I'm hoping maybe won't have to throw out so much hay here in the next few days.
Well, I hope not. I know we've got a lot of our friends out in the West that are really suffering with these drought conditions, and so the Bible tells us there are blessings in the snow, and I think I think there's something to the snow more so than even the rain. About
this old global warming, you know, is an interesting thing, but I honestly, though, all joking aside, I think we're experiencing some weather cycles that are not unlike what we had in the late 20s, early 30s, back before we had greenhouse emissions, gas emissions, and then the same thing in the early 50s. You know, we had a period where the weather cycles were kind of squirrely and strange, and we just in the ranching world, you cut your numbers down and circle the wagons and hunker down, and that's what most of the folks around here are doing. I mentioned Debbie Sobel earlier. She and her husband have the Circle Dot Ranch out east of here, and it's one of the oldest registered brands in the state of New Mexico, and they've been at it for a while. They've seen a lot of these different changes in weather.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know, and of course, I'm not as old as you. I don't remember the 20s and 30s.
Well, I don't either, but I've heard about them.
Goodness. But, yeah, I know over my 60 years, I've seen a lot of changes in the patterns, and sometimes it just kind of goes through a cycle. So, we hope you guys get some good moisture out there, and maybe this drought will break for everybody pretty soon. You know, we depend, and I'm back here in the southeast out near Nashville, and we depend on a lot of our food supply to come from our western states, whether it's beef or whether it's produce. And so,
oh, absolutely. Wheat and grains, and you betcha. Where are you from, Nashville?
I'm just about 45 miles east of Nashville. Takes me about 45 minutes, and I'm just downtown Music City. So,
years past, I spent quite a bit of time out at Charlie Daniels' Twin Pines Ranch out there by Mount Juliet and Lebanon, and
right.
and got a lot of good memories of that part of Tennessee on I-40 just east of Nashville there.
Right. Well, we're just a short drive in, but I'm out where I can enjoy the horses and don't have to look at neighbors, so I like that just fine.
Yeah, that's pretty country, I think. You know, there was a time when Tennessee was about as west as you could get. Nobody, much knew what was out beyond that, you know.
Well, that's true. That's true. I think, Tennesseans came on and pioneered Texas, so Texas owes
a lot.
Well,
they did, and I tell you what, being a native Texan, and most of my kids were born in Texas, and in fact, when we were expecting, I drove to Amarillo as fast as we could so we could have Texas-born babies. But if it weren't for Davy Crockett, and those volunteers, there's a really a bond between Texas and Tennessee.
Well, there really is. There really is. Let's talk a little bit about. And we want to play quite a bit of your music because, and I'll tell you, we had some folks a couple of weeks ago. We played one of your songs called Hell in a Helmet.
Right.
And our service people are now listening to the show in Japan, and they loved that song, I think.
Oh, great.
Somebody told me that they were going online trying to buy some of your CDs now, but we want to share the great music that you both perform and write. And one of those is a song that's called Cowboy's Prayer, and it's a great song. Any story behind that one?
Well, yeah. In this part of the country, this is short grass country, and it's grama grass, and it's real high in all kinds of nutrients. And so on years where we've had good rain and snowfall, there's a lot of cattle come from, yearling cattle come from Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida. And what they'll do is they'll bring them in here, and it, where we are, we're at the foot of the mountains. It's about 6,600 feet, and they'll acclimate them to the higher altitude, and then they'll push them up to the high country. And that is, there's a lots of cowboys that will go up and stay with those cattle all summer long. And then, you know, before the, when it starts getting cold and the first, before the first snows come, maybe around the middle of October, they'll bring them back down and ship them. And then they'll go to the feedlot or out into the market. But, Cowboy's Prayer is about a fellow that's, he's been checking cattle and, living a solitary life, and he's coming back down with those cattle, and his one prayer is that his lady's waiting for him, and that's what the song's about.
All right, well, this is a great song, and we're talking with R.W. Hampton. The song is Cowboy's Prayer, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard worldwide online.
Another night away from home, sleeping all alone beneath the stars, oh, wondering how you are. And under this old coyote moon, I'm praying that I'll be home soon and in your arms. Oh, your love. Let the wind be always at my back. Let me keep these doggies right on track. Don't want to lose a one. Let the trail be wide and the water sweet. Let the grass be green beneath our feet till the ride is done. And when I get home, please let me find you waiting there. That's my cowboy's prayer. The air turns sharp as new barbed wire. I pull my blanket near the fire and dream of you. Oh, I always do. I just hope it doesn't snow, 'cause that would make the miles to go last way too long. I can't wait that long. So let the wind be always at my back. Let me keep these doggies right on track. Don't wanna lose a one. Let the trail grass be green beneath our feet till the ride is done. And when I get home, please let me find you waiting there. That's my cowboy's prayer. And when I get home, please let me find you waiting there. That's my cowboy's prayer. That's my cowboy's prayer. This old cowboy's prayer. This old
Cowboy's Prayer with R.W. Hampton, and that's from his CD, Austin to Boston, and it's a great CD. RW, you know, it's kind of nice to have somebody to come back home to when you've been out on the road or where you've been punching cattle. I know that family is number one with you, and there are a lot of real traditional values that you hold on to. This Cowboys album that you're going to release pretty soon is pretty important. And I know the first song that we played on the show today is one called Don't Tell Me, and we're talking about the West being dead. I think Charlie Russell had said back in 1917 that the West was dead, and that was a little premature, wasn't it?
Well, it was. Yeah, he said the West is dead. You may lose a sweetheart, but you'll never forget her. And, you know, the West is always changing. His West involved the fencing of the open range and the Indians being put on the reservations and the demise of the great buffalo herds. But the West is not dead by any means. As long as there's room for a man or woman to ride and swing a rope, and as long as there's cattle to look after, the West is very much alive. It's not even sick yet, really.
Well, there are some challenges that
challenges, that's for sure. And of course, we've been. I think on your next segment, you're going to be talking about that quite a bit, and we've been hearing a lot about the BLM and Forest Service and so forth. But the Western spirit, you know, is very much alive, and it's good to sing about it and talk about it.
Well, it is, and we've talked about this before, and I know we've talked a lot with some of our other guests. That Western spirit, the cowboy way of life is still very important, still very alive, but the type of music that you're doing and some of our other friends out there like Belinda Gale and Don Edwards and some of the others are really telling the story about the West and as it was, and in some cases as it is today, and really just great, great storytelling along with the great music that we get to enjoy. Did you have any influences as far as artists?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in a home where we, you know, country music was our was kind of our mainstay. But because of my folks, you know, they grew up through the 40s. They were children in the World War II years, and then they graduated from high school in the early 50s. That we listened to all kinds of music, and I when I first started playing the guitar and singing in my teens, I played a lot of Lefty Frizzell and Merle Haggard, Johnny Cash, Marty Robbins, and those guys are huge, huge influences in my music. I think you can probably hear some Haggard in there, and then. As I get a little bit older, my voice changes, a little Cash shows up, and some Marty Robbins in my writing, and but also, you know, it's a lot of people maybe don't realize this, but you know, everywhere we go, we have to drive, whether it's to town to pick up some feed or get the kids at the bus and whatever, and so we have the radio on, and or the CD and CD player going, and I listen to a lot of Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Tony Bennett and Sarah Vaughan and Joe Stafford, and I love that kind of classic pop music. I really, really like that a lot.
Right.
And sometimes,
right.
Sometimes I listen to Roy Orbison and Buddy Holly, and I think I'm musically confused because Austin to Boston, you know, is such a wide variety. I even have a crazy little thing called Love on there. When we were doing that album, we were expecting our sixth and final child, who's now 7. He's going to be 8 here pretty soon. And I was sitting there playing my guitar and singing, you know, this thing called Love. It cries like from the cradle at night, you know.
Right,
and they said,
right.
Man, that's cool. Let's record that. And so we did. And
it is a great CD. As a matter of fact, talking about the, you know, a little bit different kind of twist on your music. Baby, It's Cold Outside is one.
Mary Kay.
yeah, she was on the show last week, and just a sweetheart. I'm beginning to think there's something about the water back out there in the West. She's got 10 kids, and you have 6, so I'm kind of glad I'm back here in the Southeast. But,
a lot of us don't have very good satellite TV, and the winters are long and cold, and so. No, she is a sweetheart. She and her husband are dear friends of Lisa's and mine, and you mentioned this new album or double album set, This Cowboy, My Country. Mary Kay and I did a duet that's going to be on that, and it's really a beautiful song. We just clicked in the studio, and Rich O'Brien and Aram Metter, the engineer, we got a fabulous, great sound, and the magic happened. And as we did on Baby, It's Cold Outside, boy, we had a lot of fun doing that.
Well, that was a fun CD, and of course, you know, you guys are, you know, getting a little tickled in it, which made that a lot of fun too. and we played that some during Christmas, but I tell you what, we put that on the air back in January too, because it was cold outside.
Well, yeah. People think it's a Christmas song, but I think it's a winter song.
It's a winter song. It's a great song. Talking about your new double CD set that's coming out, we've got a song that we're going to play right now called Angel.
Yeah.
And when I listened to that first, I kind of missed a little bit as far
right.
as the words. And then I was listening to that again this morning, and it's, man, what a sweet love story. And song.
Yeah, it. Wow. That's become a personal favorite of mine, and I can say that because these songs that I write, I feel like the good Lord gives them to me. But my dearest longtime cowboy buddy Don Cates, he and I punch cows together, and we've been through a lot of life together, and his parents have been much like my parents, and. When it came time for his mama to leave this earth, we gathered there in a hospital in a little town there in the panhandle of Texas. And Donnie's been hauling some cattle here lately, and he had promised to haul these cattle. And he said, R.W., I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't want to leave Mom and Dad here. They say she may have just a few hours, and I don't want to leave them here. But I've got to haul these cattle, and I'm just so torn inside. And I said, well, buddy, I tell you what, I'll stay here with your mom and daddy. I'll be you tonight, and we'll pray that your mama lingers till you get back. But I'll stay with your daddy and your mama here in the hospital. And so he took off, and I found myself with his daddy, and we talked, and that night he told me the whole story of their life together. There's 60 years of marriage together, and the good times and the bitter hard times and the in-between times, and told me the whole story. And basically a few days later I just wrote it down, and it is a saying goodbye song, and the Lord was faithful, and she lingered till Donnie got back, and then I wrote this song, and actually sang it at her service. But Yeah, it's just a song about our kind of people and lives well lived, and a song about commitment. And he told me, he said, the daddy that night told me, he said, you know, when I first saw her, I rode into this little panhandle town, and she was about 16 or 17, and she had come in with her daddy, and she had on Levi's and a flannel shirt and had these old work gloves tucked in her pocket. He said, she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and I knew right then I was going to marry her. And he said, R-Dub, the other day, he said, you know, she was out there in the corral getting ready to feed the horses, and she had on Levi's and a flannel shirt and those work gloves stuffed in her pocket. And he said, you know, after 60 years later, he said, she was just as beautiful as she was back then. And
well, so, this is a great song. It's Angel, and it's from the soon to be released double CD set, This Cowboy, My Country, and we're talking with R.W. Hampton.
And this is the first time I believe this has ever been heard.
The first time I saw Angel, I was standing on a dusty street in a western town. What had I found? All dressed up in cowboy clothes, a working hand from head to toe, and darn pretty too. Who only knew? An angel in Levi's. The first time I kissed Jimmy Lee, I knew that it was meant to be, 'cause my heart sang, the heavens rang. Now that's been almost 60 years ago. Where the time has gone to, good Lord only knows. And I wouldn't take nothing for the ride up the trail of life with Angel by my side. I've seen heaven with my very eyes, standing by my side, my angel in Levi's. We settled in on a homestead claim. Life gets tough in the ranching game, but love grew up, and love was enough. And when the wolves howl at the door, we'd dig a little deeper and go for more. And she would smile, that angel smile, my angel in Levi's. There was the time that we went bust, our hopes and dreams had turned to dust, and I'd want to. She wouldn't think of it. We had two boys that buried one. Our tears of sorrow choked the sun. And she would say, gonna see my will one day. She'd say, the Lord won't give us more than we can stand. Angel made me so much more than just a man. And I wouldn't take nothing for the ride up the trail of life with Angel by my side. I've seen heaven with my very eyes, standing by my side, my angel in Levi's. And I wouldn't take nothing for the ride up the trail of life with Angel by my side. All too soon it's time to say goodbye. I'll see you on the other side, my angel in Levi's. My angel in Levi's.
Well, that is the premiere of Angel. And R.W., just a great song. And I know that had to mean a lot to the family to have you perform that and offer that tribute at for service. But just great song. And again, that's from the soon-to-be-released This Cowboy My Country by R.W. Hampton. And
I believe that that's the first time that has ever been played on the air, and I hope it's the first of many times, but Lisa was just reminding me that that actually is a rough mix. We've got background vocals on there now, and I think provided by Mary Kay and Kristen Harris, but anyhow, it's I'm just really proud that I got to write that, and it just I think it'll fit a lot of people's stories.
Yeah, well, it's a great song, and you know, again, when I listened to that for the second time this morning, it was just like what a tribute and a love story that actually is. You know, I just enjoy visiting with you, and you guys are great. We have an event that's coming up the first weekend in June to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation, and that is a foundation that our mutual friend Michael Martin Murphy started to benefit children that are suffering from osteogenesis imperfecta, which is brittle bone disease. And
right.
So we're going to be holding rides in five different states, June 5th, 6th, and 7th, but you are going to be in Colorado Springs, Colorado, at the Norris Penrose Event Center.
That's
and,
right.
And so we're just, and you know, by the way, folks, R.W. is donating his time for this and for this cause, and all the money that's generated from these trail rides and concerts go to the foundation to help kids that are suffering from this incurable disease. And so I just want to tell you right now, thank you for helping us with this. And I know folks are going to be looking forward to that concert if they're anywhere in the New Mexico, Colorado area, to come out and enjoy 3 days of riding. But if they can't come for the 3 days and stay there, then the concert is open to the general public, and Ken Lee is going to be opening for you.
You betcha, yeah.
A neat guy. So it's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be some different activities that are going on for those 3 days. So I will say this, that you can go to equestrianlegacy.net, check our event section, and you can find out information on all of the rides, how to get registered at each location, and then there are actually links that you can buy tickets in advance for these shows, and I'm sure that they're going to sell out. R.W., again, thank you for doing that, and it's going to be
a
great time.
I got to tell you, I am looking forward to it, and I think we're going to jump our horses in the trailer and load the kids up and come, and I've been very fortunate. I mean, I absolutely love my kids, and five boys and one daughter and five grandkids, and but they've all been healthy, and we have been so blessed. And so it's just time to give back to folks that need some help, you know. And
Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, a lot of folks don't know this. That foundation was named after Michael Martin Murphy's granddaughter, Fiona.
Right.
And I regret you and Lisa and Mary and Brad
were
all at that concert, and somehow I missed you.
We sure were. We were at that beautiful store there in Nashville during the Americana Convention. And,
right, two old hippies.
We were there within a few thousand square feet of each other, but didn't get to visit. But we got to meet her, though, Fiona, and what a sweetheart. And
well, she really is. Actually, I have a really great picture of you and Murph and Fiona together. And just a super young lady, quite a spirit that she has.
Oh yeah.
And of course, you know, all this is to help raise money for these kids that they are helping with the foundation. So be sure and check out EquestrianLegacy.net, our event section, and you can find out details on all of the events across the country. They're going to be doing a day ride out in Texas.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we didn't do a three-day event, and so the Capital Area Quarter Horse Association said, well, we want to participate, and so they're doing a day ride, going to have a barbecue, and all of that will be to help the foundation support these kids as well. RW, our time is just kind of slipping away.
Yeah, where'd it go, man?
I don't know. It's just fun talking fun talking with you, and, of course, it's always great to listen to this music. Do you have any tours that are set up besides the June event that we want to remind people about that that they can come and see you?
Well, I tell you, the best thing to do is to go to the website, and all those events will be listed. I am the world's worst on dates. In fact, I have been scrambling around trying to be secretive because I thought that Mother's Day was this weekend. And it's not. So I want to encourage folks to go to the website. But we just recently got back from the East Coast, and what we're doing right now is we're putting the finishing touches on this album, double album set, and doing the artwork and graphics, and doing some planning for promotion and releases and so forth. So we've got quite a few pending dates, but they will be once we get them all formalized and in concrete, then they'll start showing up with the dates.
Okay. All right. Well, you can go to rwhampton.com, his website, and check out his tour schedule there and keep up with RW. Also, you can visit and like his page on Facebook. And that's R.W. Hampton on Facebook as well. So always fun to talk with you. Always great to be playing your music and sharing that with people as well. And please give my regards to your lovely wife, Lisa. She's such a jewel, and what a great partner she is for you.
Well, she is a good partner. And we've partnered on ranches, kids, music, and all kinds of stuff. And We butt heads every now and then, like husbands and wives do. But I'm very much in love with her, and but I want to encourage folks to stay tuned to you, because you're going to be talking about our public lands, and whether riding on those public lands is a rider privilege, and I'm putting some thought into that as well. I have actually worked on ranches that, I worked on one big ranch that was on some BLM and, was associated with folks coming on there for recreational purposes. So that's going to be an interesting topic.
Well, this will be a good second segment that we're going to be going into in just a minute. We have Jim McGarvey, who is the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America, that will be joining us in just a moment, and we'll be talking about what they're doing, and we'll pose that question. And so, and I told you a little bit earlier before the show started, if you want to call back in and you know, with your two cents worth, that's okay, because we're going to open the lines up a little bit later
okay.
when Jim's on. But
all
anyway,
right.
RW, thanks again so much for joining
us
on the show.
Well, thank you.
Always good to talk to you, and we're going to close out this segment with another great song, and we'll talk more about, we'll get you back on again, because there's some different things that we'd like to talk about with you, but this is one that's My Country's Not for Sale, and RW, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, and we'll be in touch, and our trails will cross again soon.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. When we come back, we'll talk with Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. But right now, this is My Country's Not for Sale by R.W. Hampton. Thanks again, R.W.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, bye-bye.
Adios.
There's a trail of blood back through the sacred halls of history. Follow it back to where our fathers fought and died. Across the ways, see the crosses on the hillside. On the wind, hear their voices as they cry. We've got to get back to the faith of our fathers and find our way back to the Liberty Bell and never forget that old flag and all she stands for. It's time to rise up and say this country is not for sale. She's not for sale. From Valley Forge they're calling. Not for sale. From Gettysburg they cry. From Bella Wood to the battle for Fallujah. She's not for sale. No, not at any price. There was a time when we all stood together. There was a time when by fire we were tried. But we've lost our way. It's a way that costs so dearly. It's not too late to saddle up and ride. We've gotta get back to the faith of our fathers and find our way back to the Liberty Bell and never forget that old flag and all she stands for. It's time to tell Washington my country's not for sale. From the Alamo to the sands of Iwo Jima, from Normandy to the Chosun Reservoir, back to Bataan, to the mighty Mekong Delta, from the Helmand Province to the Solomon's bloody shores, they cry, we gotta get back to the faith of our fathers.
Jim McGarvey is the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America, and Equestrian Legacy Radio is just very pleased to have formed a partnership with BCHA back in September, and each first Thursday of the month, they join us to give us an update on what's going on with our trails and any legislation and things that we as trail riders and horse people need to be aware of. And Jim, I hope you've been enjoying the last few minutes of that show. I appreciate you hanging on the line.
Oh yeah, I love listening to RW's music. It's really great. It was a pleasure listening on. Thank you. I've been waiting.
Well, we're just really happy to have you join us today, and there is a lot for us to talk about. And I think I'd like to start out talking about the new look that BCHA has, because you've changed the website and you've done a lot of things, and share a little bit with us about that.
Well, yeah, we have. We've had a lot on the table in the past past year, and it all came together this past week as we rolled out all our new initiatives at our national board meeting in Chattanooga, which was the first time we've ever had a national board meeting east of the Mississippi.
and rarely do we have one east of the Rocky Mountains. And so it was great to be here. And folks got a little bit of the southern flavor. And a number of our national directors got to ride at the Chickamauga National Battlefield Park. And they left. These are folks that ride, you know, Grand Teton and Glacier and all up place out west. And a lot of them thought this a ride at Chickamauga National Battlefield ought to be on everybody's bucket list. And so it was great, great kickoff there. But the things we've been working on have been a lot of them. We're a conservative group, I think, as most horse people are, especially the trail riding portion of us. We tend to be conservative in our outlook, and so
right.
Not a lot has changed, you know, in our organizational structure over the past 40 years. But the issues that we face and the people that we work with in the outdoors and on the trails, the hikers and the mountain bikers and all the other users, things move fast, rapidly. Communication is rapid now, and so I think all of our members agree we could kind of do a bit of a makeover in places and some upgrading. And so we've done a lot of places, and we had a lot of help from our volunteer folks in our group and throughout the country. But one of them won't go down necessarily any order, but one of them was we live streamed our national board meeting, and you can see almost all of our things, all of our new initiatives are on backcountryhorse.com. That's backcountryhorse.com. But we did a live streaming of our national board meeting in Chattanooga, and a lot of folks don't, at any type of a national organization, don't understand exactly what goes on at these national meetings, you know. And so
right.
I thought it was a good opportunity to share with everybody that you know, we're a serious crowd. We consider everything very seriously, and we had a public lands day on last Thursday, in which we had folks from the Forest Service, the Wilderness Society, the National Park Service speak, and a question-and-answer session that you know, that everybody can now look at the live streaming because it's stored on the system and see how it goes on, plus our discussions of the topics and the business of running a national organization and what it takes. So that live streaming went pretty well, a few glitches, but we had our young women volunteers, and Amy McBride and Heather Fillingham and Nellie Lucas did quite well, ran the cameras and double cameras with the screen and that. And so that went well. And then another one we had was our new website, which did a quicker look, a faster look, a cleaner look. Also, we have to be cognizant, though, when doing this, that often people don't think about that. When you live, as a lot of our members do, in out west and remote places, your bandwidth isn't as great as maybe city folks that are used to. And
right.
So we had to construct it, a clean look, but and a modern look, but yet with a lot of information, but still downloadability. And I think we've accomplished that.
It's a lot more user friendly. Than your old website was, and I would encourage folks to visit the website backcountryhorse.com. But it's a great looking site, and again, so much more user friendly than the other site was. And you can even get a look at Jim there, because there's a chairman's you know section on there with.
Well, I had no input on some of those placements. thank you. It a lot of folks worked on it, and we're continue to. One thing that you might find is the ease of use. This has always been a problem. If you type in your zip code, it'll GPS you your zip code to nearby chapters and their addresses and contact information. So if you want to join Backcountry at a local chapter level, we've got 176 chapters across the country. We have three in Tennessee, four in Georgia, just as close by here. And so you type it in, you can go directly to information to join. So really pleased. A lot of work went into that, and good team with this. Another initiative we have was estate giving or estate planning. I think that's if you've, you know, the colleges and different places, you may get things in the mail now to join into this, and we're putting that together both as an endowment, which would be something as an ongoing thing, draw income from, but more readily to specifically place in your will, or even while you're still alive, please, funds towards the backcountry horseman. You can direct them exactly, specifically where you'd like to see them spent. And so that's not completely done. It's a little, it's involved. One has to do that quite properly, like everything. But moving right along with it, and we've already gotten one gift is heading that way, and another one. So that's getting kicked off. We also did a great deal of work and initiative, but we did a video. Our member Robin Schindel in Oregon has a background, lifelong background in marketing and video and this type of thing. And he had a team in conjunction with the Backcountry Horsemen of Oregon and the University of Oregon Media School. They put together a video. This type of thing, it's hours and hours of video and tens and hundreds of hours of getting ready. But it comes down to 3 minutes and 12 seconds, So
right,
that's,
right.
Even I'm on there a little bit, taken from the Rick Lamb, horse show.
Horse show,
interview
right.
With Rick and good guy, a great guide supporter. And also our folks out in Oregon, Backcountry Horsemen of Oregon, they packed in for the night before. They had scoped out some places. There was a lot of snow still in the mountains, so they had to be a little selective where they went. The rain, the trailhead was called Dry Lake, and it was flooded. But they worked through it really well and gave a nice look to it. And our great spokesman, Casey Hustetter, out there, talking about why to contribute and why care about what the Backcountry Horseman does. And that came out really well. And that again, is you can see that, and I'll explain to you how to get to that in a couple minutes.
I'll just mention here, if you go to equestrianlegacy.net on our homepage, we have that video posted. So all you have to do is go to our homepage
and watch
the video. So it was a great video. I actually looked at it a couple of different times. I thought you did a great job and putting that together, and you did okay too.
I can talk. Some people get nervous in front of people, but the more people, the less nervous I am. And
right.
But if you put a camera there, you have to say, even if the words aren't exact, just try to say an idea. I have to commend Casey for his work, because he had a lot of words to say, and a lot got cut because we had to get down to 3 minutes. But so I did just okay. But another initiative we had was a new email system. Without going into it, but it's more formalized, cleaner look on the matches, the website, type of email, the database control, rather than just sending out the type of emails that maybe you and I send to each other. So this
right.
is with more impact and greater control. So that was a good one. We have our new crowdfunding initiative, and I'll go into that for a minute because it sounds new and complex, and in a way it is, and in a way it isn't. But if you put in your mind, let's say, National Public Radio or public television has their spring and fall fundraisers, this is whether you give a prize, an incentive gift, a thank you for donating, sort of what we're doing. We're working at a site called Indiegogo.com, and again, you can get through to this from backcountryhorse.com.
Right.
The idea is, let me step back. For 40 years, now going on a 41st year, Backcountry Horseman organization has been completely 99% funded internally by its membership dues and what have you. And for us to, as I say, run with the big dogs, we need to expand that income and strengthen our structure. And so one way of doing that is I followed what the Continental Divide Trail Coalition did last summer. And that is these crowdfunding sites, and there's about 500, but we're using the second biggest, Indiegogo. The fellows that started Google have one too. And what this does, it's formatted for people to go. click on donate, pick your gift. You can see the our video or any videos on it. People for capitalization of new companies, for selling shares, investors in new ideas, they do these sites. Indiegogo does 501(c)s. And so we followed the Continental Divide's example of last year and brought in our fellow Jonathan Stalls, who's a long-distance runner, hiker. He hiked across Scotland last summer, and he hiked across America a few years ago, 8.5 months. There's a picture of his dog in the Atlantic Ocean, and 8.5 months later, he and his dog are in the Pacific Ocean in San Francisco. He raised $500,000 for micro-lending in third-world countries, and so Jonathan teaches this, and so he's a big supporter. He came to Chattanooga, and it's a lot of work. But what we're doing, what's kind of gotten more exciting here, we're trying to raise $50,000 in to help fund our outdoor advocacy work. But a national foundation that's been following us closely has offered a challenge grant of another $25,000 if we hit 50.
Oh, that's great.
So for every dollar you give, we get 50. You get 50. We get 50 cents more. And so we got off to a great weekend. At Chattanooga, where we kicked it off last Friday night, and we got up near 40% in the first 40 hours. And so now we have to go the other 60 because it slows down after that. But sure invite folks to go and donate some great gifts, ranging from a key fob to a pack ride in the immigrant wilderness, pack ride in Utah. We already... Some folks, that's at the $5,000 level. That sounds like
right,
the CBS.
Right.
But we had one in the Oregon a wilderness, and that one's already taken. So we have two more. So it's just fun to go look and see our story. You don't have to donate. Just go read about us. But so that was a good one. And I think the last thing that had the biggest impact for us was our new brand, which you're showing here on your site, Gary.
Right,
and,
right.
Again, that was the fellow Robin Schindel in Idaho that did the video. Brand or logo, it shows the in a moment. Even if you're not a horse person, the intricacy of leading a pack string.
I mean, right.
You often see pictures of them across an open field or prairie, but that's because you can get a good photo. But often it's going down a trail with trees and tangles and curves and branches. And so that gives a good example, and we're excited about it. It sort of epitomizes our whole new effort that we're trying to rebrand, not what we do, but just a rebranding of our image. So
right,
that's,
right.
We got more things coming out next year. So.
Well, it's a great website. It's some great things that you're doing new. And we're going to take just a real quick break and listen to a song that kind of talks about the kind of country that we love. It's called Granite Mountain. But when we come back, Jim, I want to talk a little bit about what you shared with me about your visit in Montana with a couple of the founders. And and one of the questions I'm going to ask you can think about this a little bit, is how has the mission changed or has it changed in the last 41 years? But we're talking with Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and this is Granite Mountain by Belinda Gale, and we'll be right back.
Rises up from the valley floor, covered with rocks and so much more, lurk between the junipers and boulders. Mountain lion, prickly pear, there is danger, be aware. And don't forget to look back on your shoulder. straddle life between the old and the new way. Some say golden cattle drew them, all we know the mountain threw them off. Nothing left but the wild strays. Granite Mountain, oh, the silhouette we know so well. Granite Mountain, sometimes you are heaven, sometimes you are hell.
Listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. And I thought that song was kind of fitting, Jim, and kind of gave us both a chance to take a breath too. But you were in Montana for a meeting with some of the folks out there for a state meeting, and I think you shared with me that you got to meet with two of the original founders, or two of the surviving founders.
Yes, I did. There's a special meeting in Montana. They have their annual state meeting, which they've been really having for 41 years. Backcountry Horsemen was founded in the Flathead Valley, which is near Glacier National Park. Just that whole valley and the Bob Marshall Wilderness is to the east, and Glacier National Park is to the north. And so it's that kind of country. But the my wife Cindy and I were invited to come up. I was a keynote speaker and spoke a couple other times. It was at the Missoula chapter, so the meeting was in Missoula, and it was their 40th anniversary. We have 176 chapters, and Missoula was number two, and so
wow.
It's a pretty special group. And so we're up there, and I think if your listeners keep in mind that when we talk about these things, that there's 155 national forests, over 400 national parks. And BLM land, which is larger than all of them, controlled at state level. And while these are all, of course, governed out of Washington, they really are governed quite closely by the forest supervisor or the national park superintendent. And they do their own forest plans, their own park plans separately from Washington. And so you have varying degrees of access, of how things are determined. So it varies parks, national parks can be very close together, and it'll be completely different kind of land plans. Not completely different, but as far as horse people are concerned, it can have great impact. So,
right.
So whenever I visit, the topic comes up, access, you know, and this type of thing. So we got into a topic after the meeting and with a group of the folks. I brought up the concept whether it's a right or a privilege to ride on public lands. And we got in a great discussion about this. It was people very differently. And I start and go back where this concept kind of started with me was 2006 or 7. Here at the Chattahoochee National Forest in North Georgia, it's about 900,000 acres. And the new forest plan, developed in 2004 and 2005, says their own separate plan, decided to, the recommendation to be implemented was that the horses could only stay on approved trails. They couldn't go cross-country. That is, you couldn't leave the trail. It was a $1,000 fine, which, of course, wouldn't be implemented, but no leaving the trails. This policy was implemented at the Talladega National Forest in Alabama, which is still in place, and at the Shawnee in Illinois. So we started, I was president of the North Georgia chapter at that time, which is sort of in the middle of the National Forest area, up there in Blue Ridge area. And I would come from the viewpoint that it's a right to ride in the National Forest, but I hadn't quite put it that way. But I was rallying the folks to send, you know, cards and letters to your congressman, to send me, you know, to, if we were going to start a legal fund, we started a legal fund to sue, you know, the National, the Forest Service, et cetera. So I got a lot of emails, 100 a day, and back then. And it was, half of them were against me or upset with me for upsetting Forest Service management, that they would take away our privilege of riding if I kept up my attitude, you know. So,
wow.
And I argued, I mean, some are almost hateful mail, really mm-hmm. got bitter. I mean, horses are emotional and cause emotions in folks, and so it got me to really thinking, and I would write long emails and reply back, you know, that why I thought this. So anyway, it made an impression on me subsequently with that Forest Service issue. They rescinded that. A good handshake. It's been a great relationship there, and it's actually nationally known of how, and that's another topic of another show about the co-trails effort up there. But
All right. So
went to brought that up with the folks up in Montana, and then so went through the meeting. We talked about it, and the meeting is over, and we were invited by Cindy and I were invited by one of the founders, Ken Osk. Who I've known because he's a national director, or he's on the executive committee and comes to national meetings. He and his wife, Phyllis, invited us up to Columbia Falls, which is right near the gateway of the glacier, right near the Bob Marshall. And also that evening, of Sunday evening, Roland Cheek, who is the other founder, who I'd not met, there are two surviving founders still, Roland and his wife, Alice, came over, along with Deb Schatz and Deb and Greg Schatz, Montana members forever, good folks. And we talked about rider privilege. And Roland Cheek is a bit of a philosopher. He's an author of several books. I just looked up his site here. It's RolandCheek.com, R-O-L-A-N-D, Cheek, C-H-E-E-K.com.
Okay.
He's a storyteller. So we started talking about it as a rider of privilege. And Roland came down with it. He thought it was a right. Ken, the other founder, said, "Well, it's both. It's a right and a privilege." It gets kind of complex. I think folks think that. I think most people agree that maybe getting a driver's license is a privilege. At least it's thought that way. But I think if you have insurance and a car and you're of age, it's almost a right that you have to get your license.
Right.
You pass.
Right.
But so it's complex. I mean, the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, is a right. But that's also a great responsibility that, you know, you act carefully and respectfully and you know, that whole ethic of gun ownership. So we talked about it, and it turned out that Roland Cheek, he's written a 2,800-page article. He's divided into two parts about that. When we went to see Roland, we all went over to Roland's place about a mile away from Ken's 2 days later. And Roland had On Liberty by Thomas Paine out. You know, he was reviewing it.
Wow.
To delve into that. And one of the reasons we wanted to go see Roland and Alice before we went back home, but that happened. The founding of Backcountry Horsemen was, the idea came in the Bob Marshall Wilderness around the campfire, but the nuts and bolts of it came out, subsequently back down in the valley, in the Flathead Valley, and we kind of picked, that's where ground zero was between the four founders, four and five founders. It was right this spot, happened to be Roland's house, so on a map. So it was just kind of a ground zero, you know, hollow ground. And so
right.
We sat there, and it's not resolved, but I think it comes, Roland's idea, and Ken, the other founder, their ideas, I think, is that it is a right, but it carries great responsibility. And if you don't fulfill that responsibility, then you've lost your right. And so
right.
I think that's where we have it. And I think, there's the other users, the off-road vehicles, the mountain bike and hiking folks, and everybody that they all have the responsibility to exercise that right. Otherwise, you lose it. And I think that's what Backcountry is pushing and what those founders put together. And their idea was, let's fulfill that responsibility and therefore keep our right to ride.
Well, that's a great question. We want to give our callers, our listeners, an opportunity to call in if they'd like to and express their opinions and thoughts and maybe ask questions of you. And the number that they can call is 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396. And I think it's a topic that bears some discussion. Obviously, it did sitting around in Montana. But let's take just a real quick break. We'll give our callers a chance to call in, or our listeners a chance to call in if they'd like. And again, 213-943-3396. And let's listen to a song called Shortgrass by R.W. Hampton. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're privileged to have with us today Jim McGarvey, Chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America.
And the wind always blows, a place big enough for a man to dream, back home where the short grass grows. The Lord never painted a prettier sky, almost as blue as the blue of her eyes, when we shared our love by the pinon fire's glow, back home where the short grass grows. I'm going where the short grass grows. Blue mountains rise and the wind always blows, a place big enough for a man to dream, back home where the short grass grows. Like the wind in her hair, when I close my eyes I can almost be there. I can see my love awaiting where that old sweet water flows, back home where the short grass grows. I'm going where the short grass grows. Blue mountains rise and the wind always blows, place big enough for a man to dream, back home where the short grass grows.
where the short grass is a-waving to a turquoise sky above. The aspen-covered hills guard the country that I love. I'm going where the short grass grows. The blue mountains rise and the wind always blows. A place big enough for a man to dream. Back home where the short grass grows. My home where the short grass grows. The short grass grows.
You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Jim McGarvey, and we have a caller on the line, but let me encourage our listeners that if you'd like to call in, 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396 is the number. And, Jim, let's see who we have on the line.
Okay.
You're on Equestrian Legacy Radio, and who am I speaking with, and where are you from?
This is R.W. Hampton from Cimarron, New Mexico.
I should have recognized that number.
I tell you what, I was really interested when I found out who you were going to have on there, and I was interested in the discussion and been listening. And I wanted to offer my two cents. Most of the ranches I've worked on have been on private land, but I worked on one ranch that had some BLM country, and then another that had some Forest Service land, and I would say it's a right that should be treated like a privilege. And when you're riding on, and you've mainly been talking about wilderness areas, but my experience has been land where people are actively trying to make a living. And I think you need to treat it like a privilege. And, you know, close, when you go to a gate, close them, and, you know, be mindful of... I had a friend one time that was looking after some cattle in some desert country on BLM, and some people had camped pretty close to the water, and the cattle wouldn't come, you know, they were too, for whatever reason, they were too frightened to come up and drink, you know. And
right.
So, oddly enough, he said he's deceased now, but he'd asked them to please move their camp, and they kind of blew him off, and he went back several times, and they had been... pulling the cork on the bottle quite a bit. I think they were hunting, and they finally told him, kid, get out of here. And cattle, you know, out in some of that country, it's a long ways to water, and that's where those cattle have been watering, and they were out there bawling. And so he snuck in there that night and pitched his rope over the tent. And he said, I didn't know that they made tents with floors in them. And... he rode off and heard the most god-awful sound there when that rope came tight, and I think there was about four or five people in there, but they were sure gone the next morning. But
that's funny.
But anyhow, I think we should treat it like a privilege, you know, because there are people out there that would rather us not be there, and some of them are administrative people, and some of them are... maybe a little more radical environmentalist, and that's all we need to do is break too many of their rules, and then they'll fix it where we can't come back forever. So that's my two cents on the deal.
All right.
You know, on RW's comments on the ranching on public lands, I'm good friends and really familiar with folks from the Guardians of the Range in Wyoming, which is cattle ranchers that... use permits to be on Forest Service land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they, I think, you know, folk tourists that drive along and see cattle on, you know, Forest Service lands, will say, well, what are they doing tearing everything up? But actually, with the look at the ecology and the results, they're really good stewards of the land. And and plots of, there's segregated plots where cattle are not allowed to test, you know, the vegetation with or without cattle. And it appears that the vegetation is much better off with the cattle. And I think they're extra careful stewards, the ranchers, because of because of that first blush idea that, you know, they're causing more damage. But really, they do a great job out there taking care of the land. Not discounting our gentleman with the BLM this past few weeks, but the rest of them do. So,
well, yeah, and
we have a government, and then pay the permit fees.
Right, and you know, one of the greatest causes of some of our extreme fires is lack of fire, and these cattle will actually go in and clean up some stuff, and make it a lot more. You know, with these lightning strikes, they're, you know, where cattle have been, they're not as apt to explode into these horrific fires.
Oh, right, exactly.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I saw a program on PBS the other day, and then I actually had this conversation in the last couple of days with someone about the fact that when they put a bounty on wolves, and they almost eliminated the wolves in some part of the country, I think around Yellowstone, it changed the entire ecology of that. And as soon as they decided to reintroduce the wolves, things came back. Rivers that had dried up, things that had changed. And sometimes too much interference by man is a problem. And our ranchers have been grazing cattle on these lands. And as you mentioned, you know, our ranchers have been stewards of the land for generations now. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be responsible and exercise our rights at the same time. And so when government starts to interfere, I think, kind of like Jim said, you know, send out some emails.
Right.
And let's see what we can do. But it's an interesting topic, and actually I thought we'd have more callers in today, but I'm sure glad you called, R.W.
I appreciate you letting me call. I've got to, speaking of which, I got to get back out on our place, and they're letting some water down out of the mountains, so we're filling some of our ponds up. But it's a great discussion, and thanks for letting me put my two cents in.
Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts, and I was almost positive you'd gone out that window after our second on the show. So.
I decided to be like a man and just walk right past the window.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. Appreciate that.
Thank you, fellas. Thank you, all right.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, Jim, you know, we never know how many folks are going to call. I will give the number out one more time. It's 213-943-3396 if you'd like to call in and tell us what you think about the fact of is riding on our public lands a right or a privilege. But, Jim, one of the things that I wanted to go back and talk with you about, when you got to visit with these two founding fathers of the Backcountry Horsemen of America. Did you have a chance to talk about the way things have changed as far as everything? And, you know,
has the mission changed
any?
The mission hasn't changed, and actually the problems haven't changed. It was kind of a funny thing. So we got to Ken and Phyllis's house, and right off the porch, just less than 2 miles of the foot at the bottom of the mountain that goes straight up to the snow capped, and it's a great setting. And Ken had a scrapbook, which is the local historian. He had happened to have it. They have two copies of the original newsletters, of original, you know, articles, and they were really pretty good go-getters in 1973, getting in the newspaper and spreading the word, the Forest Service, and putting out a handbook. And so I flipped through the first pages. It could have been today. the problems, you know, access, the horses, the problems are the same. The complexity is probably more so because of new rules, EPA, and a lot of, and the National Environmental Policy Act is much more stringently imposed on every decision, but which is fine. But it was I think that, in fact, I made a couple comments at the our national board meeting about how that scrapbook could have been out of yesterday's work. And
right.
Ken Osk is an executive committee, so he's on a phone call. He's one of 11 of us every month and often through the month. So Ken is really on top continually of what we're doing, decisions we're making. And so Ken stays kind of quiet on the calls, but when he speaks, everybody listens. And so, and I think that from Ken's perspective, we're still sticking to the mission. And I think from Roland Cheeks, too, that we are. And with this, I think Roland and I are going to be communicating a bunch more just over the time here as things develop. And quite a likable fellow. And so I say we're staying to the mission. Matter of fact, I have to compliment the folks in Montana greatly. It's about 1,200 members. And they stay... not that the other parts of the country don't either, but they stay sort of a moral compass or true to the story of what we're trying to do here, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so it was really reassuring going back that they've not changed very much. And so, you know, we have different issues. They have front country and back country, a lot of back country, but they do have front country. You need it to get to the back country. Whereas other states, it's mostly front, lots of front country, especially if you get further east and in the southeast down here. But it's a united group, and I think we are staying to the mission. Matter of fact, every decision we make on the executive committee, and does this apply to our five purposes? Not all of them do. They sound good, but they don't apply.
Right.
And so it's... so we pass on it, maybe endorsing this or that, but I think our folks are more committed now. Well, I don't know, not more, but they are committed as much as 41 years ago.
Well, I suppose that probably that there is more awareness of the need by more people today than there was in the past. And then, of course, the methods of communicating have changed tremendously. From what they were back then.
Oh yeah, and that's an interesting point, because they their first monies that they were able to gather up as a club, if you call it that, was they printed 5,000 copies of the Horseman's Handbook of how to be the good steward of the land as a horseman, because they'll admittedly prior to that, prior to the Wilderness Act of 1964, pack outfitters and what have you were not great stewards. I mean, maybe nobody was that great of a steward, you know.
Right.
Fishing outfitters and everybody, hunters, you know, just didn't – it was not a leave-no-trace ethic, you know. And so – and trails and trail usage. And I think with – when we started in 73, it became, well, you know, we've got to do this right to – if we want to keep – we got to do this right to keep our right or privilege. And so the handbook is about this, and that was handed out to the Forest Service offices all in the mountain area, and these 5,000 copies to give to horsemen to say, this is how you do it right. And still in some printings. And so it's still the issues, it's still the commitment after all these years.
Well, and, you know, they say is the more things change, the more they stay the same, and so that's probably true in this as much as anything else. I wanted to ask you, and you know, I guess it's because I'm a Southeasterner as well, but what did your fellas think about Chickamauga when they were down there? We're kind of changing the subject.
Well, I just sent a thank you email to the Park Service Chief Ranger and Supervisor Rangers who helped us with this throughout the, you know, getting everything in order. Some of the quotes were, it was awesome, it's incredible, this ought to be on every horse rider's bucket list. You know, that and I say, these are the folks that ride out west in the Great Vistas. And so the way we organized it was something the Park Service said had never been done, was we three volunteer historians who are not, they do not guide rides or anything. They, one's an architect, one's a chief chief financial officer of an iCloud company, and one's a professor, a college instructor, and but they did this because they're history nuts and about Civil War, and so we took we practiced it to get the timing right, and then that we all, you know, sequence everybody around, and so we did the practice rides, and we had earbuds, so that they had a microphone for the guide, the historian, and then the riders would have earbuds, which made a dramatic, as my wife Cindy's idea, a dramatic change, because if you've been in any, well, all of our listeners here have been riding in horse groups, and
right.
to say something, you got to wait till everybody gathers up, you know, and then you start out again, and horses are dancing around and all that business. So,
right.
So in this case, we're, say you're riding up to a monument or exceptionally mentionable place, the historian was able to talk about it as he rode up to it. So you might stop or you might not, and then
right.
ride on again. And so it was the amount of information per running foot was really enormous. And I think a lot of folks, you know, the Civil War, more down here we're attuned to it because there's markers and things all around. But
right.
from out west, other parts of the country, northeast, the Midwest, I mean, it's something maybe in high school or college, you know, and was which side was this general on, you know, and it's really kind of a, you know, something in, way in history, but it's really brought alive. Like there's Carnes Monument, and at this monument, Carnes was 22 years old, and he went to the Naval Academy back before the Civil War to be a, you know, seaman. But when the war started, he joined, and since you have to know your artillery and your triangulation, he was head of an artillery group. With about 80 horses and 60 men, four cannons, and the caissons that carry the ammunition. And what happened, they got into a fight right in the middle, and the cannons are exactly where they were. And a shell came in and hit one of the ammunition wagons, the caissons, and exploded.
Oh, wow.
All the horses, all the two men. And so you're there, and you just, like, talk about hollowed ground, you know. Just,
right.
Just at this one spot, and so... 124,000 men, 35,000 casualties, bloodiest 2 days of the American Civil War, and 65,000 horses.
Wow.
I mean, it's enormous numbers, staggering numbers, and it's right down the road from us. And so anybody,
mm-hmm.
and it's a good place for riders, for your listeners, if we're down here in the southeast, to take Cousin Earl, who's never been on a horse, you know, to give a ride, because it's fairly, it's 75% really flat. And if you come off,
okay.
it's really soft, other than one portion in the northwest corner that gets a little more hilly and stuff. But
right.
but at 1,400 monuments, the soldiers were alive when they designed that park. It was the fourth national park, and it's hard to believe.
Wow.
It was Yellowstone, Yosemite, and Sequoia, and the fourth one was Chickamauga.
Wow,
I did not know
that.
Yeah, so it's a special place, and so if any of your riders get the chance to come down there, there's a trailhead. We used a place called Trails End at the south end of the park. We can stable your horses in that. It's Trails End Ranch is south of the park, right on the border of the park. You just ride in from the side. And then the national park has its own trailhead. There's a movie, great museum, great rifle collection, one of the world-class rifle collections are in the museum. So there's a lot there. And Park
well,
is just great with us, working with us. So.
Well, I think that one thing that shows is that we have great places to ride all across this country,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to maintain the right and the privilege to ride on those lands, we need to act responsibly and enjoy the beauty and the gifts that have been given to us. And get out and enjoy these trails and become involved with an organization like Backcountry Horsemen of America, who works so hard to keep these trails clear and to keep access available to all of us who enjoy getting out and riding those things. So want to mention one more time the fundraising campaign that Backcountry Horsemen of America has in progress right now. And I guess, Jim, to go to the website, backcountryhorse.com, and yep. can
click
find
on,
more information.
Click on the fundraising picture there, and you get a good thank you incentive prize back also. So,
all right. Well, I saw
just go to our website and learn about us. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we want to encourage people to do that. Become active and involved and, you know, get involved with some of the chapters of Backcountry Horsemen of America that are doing so much to help the trails. And, man, I know that the Parks and Forest Service folks appreciate any help that they get when folks are working together. So, Jim, any final thoughts you want to share with us?
Well, just on that last thought, we did get an award from presented to us by the Forest Service, Joe Meade, the Director of Recreation and Heritage and Volunteers. The Chief Forester of the United States prepared a plaque for him to give to us at Chattanooga, and we appreciate that that very much, that recognition. And thank you, Gary, for having us on, and having us on every month. We really look forward to it and sharing what's going on in the backcountry. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate that, and, of course, you can remind your folks, too, Jim, if they miss the live show, they can always go back and listen to the archive podcast 24/7 on demand, and you can go back and listen to any of the previous shows that we've done with Backcountry Horsemen. So enjoy having you on there. It's important to keep people informed and engaged and involved in our trails and our treasures that we have. We've got to leave a heritage and a legacy for our children if we want them to be able to enjoy those same things that we enjoy. So, Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Talk with you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We've had a great show today with R.W. Hampton, and talking with him with his music, and always great to have Backcountry Horsemen, and privileged to have Jim McGarvey, who is the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen, join us on the program today. I do want to mention again that the Twiba National Trail Ride to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation is June 5th through the 7th, and you can go to equestrianlegacy.net and visit our event section to find out more about the locations, who the tremendous artists are that will be performing at each of those locations and concerts, and that's equestrianlegacy.net, and go to our event section, and you can get the information on that as well. So that is a great cause. And I want to take just a moment to thank some folks for participating in this. The Capital Area Quarter Horse Association in Texas is a corporate sponsor for this event. ManaPro is a corporate sponsor, and we thank them. And then Equestrian Legacy Radio is pleased to be a sponsor of that as well. We also want to thank Northwest Horse Source Magazine for their articles and stories that they've done on this National Trail Ride. Trailblazer Magazine had a great article that is out right now in the stands, and be sure and check out Trailblazer Magazine. They did a nice interview with Michael Martin Murphy and talking about this National Trail Ride. And then coming up, Western Horseman has done a feature story as well. So we appreciate all of the folks that have donated space and time to help us tell people about this great event to raise money for these kids that are dealing with an incurable disease. So anyway, again, thank you for listening to the show today. We remind you that Equestrian Legacy Radio can be heard live at high noon Central Standard Time each Thursday. You can listen to us worldwide on your mobile device or your computer. You can download our programs to take them with you if you don't have internet service somewhere. And we want to remind you, too, that if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Thirst in my heart, hunger in my eyes, need to satisfy my soul. Free my wild side, my wheels have been spinning like crazy in my head. Gotta get back to living before I forget. My sights are set where that green grass is. A good running start should get me over that bend. Yeah. I need somewhere to run, somewhere to ride. Fresh pair of wings and a long stretch of sky. I've saddled these dreams, holding on tight. Need a good strong tall wind and a horse that can fly. Yeah. Got a load on my back and a lot on my mind. Yeah, the weight of this world really gets me sometimes. There's a freedom inside me I've been missing so much. Gonna kick the gates wide open and live a big old cloud of dust. Yeah. I need somewhere to run, somewhere to ride. Fresh pair of wings and a long stretch of sky. I've saddled these dreams, holding on tight. Need a good strong tall wind that can fly. Yeah. Kick 'em up, look at what lies on the horizon. Second star to the left, then straight on till morning. Light on my mind, yeah. Gonna free my wild.